We left off on Daf Mem Gimel Amud Beis. Right after the Gemara starts, a few lines. First one, line of the Lisha Tibrach. There's been two dots. Tadrabanan. The Gemara is now going to elaborate upon a din that appeared in the Mishnah that if a person owns an Eved Kanani and they do something wrong with the Eved Kanani, either they sell the Eved Kanani to a non-Jew or they sell the Eved Kanani to someone who lives in Chutz Lahav. Either one of those two things is a big problem, because in the case of selling to a non-Jew, you're in effect putting the Eved Kanani into an untenable position. He's going to have to work on Shabbos, not going to have kosher food. That was something that was wrong. Or if you sell the Chutz Lahav, it's also wrong. So he wants to live in Eretz Yisrael, wants to perform the mitzvahs of Eretz Yisrael, and you're sending him off to Chutz Lahav. So either one of those two cases, the halacha is that basically you're going to lose your rights on the Eved Kanani. The Eved is going to go free. So here the Gemara now elaborates upon what is considered to actually be, quote unquote, selling him to a non-Jew that's gonna kick that halacha in. And you sell him to a non-Jew, so it's very nice for us as the Chacham to say he's gonna go free, but the non-Jew may not be willing to participate in that statement. So either we're hoping and praying that the Eved is gonna be able to escape and he'll end up coming back and then we're gonna end up freeing him. Or we may even go ahead and force the master, the previous master, to actually redeem him. That's also a little bit later on. So it's important for us to understand what is called, quote unquote, selling him to a non-Jew and whatnot. So the Bryce begins. Lava alav mina oved kechavim. What if a person borrows money, a Jew borrows money from a non-Jew, and he puts up his eved, in effect, as collateral? So he's going to transfer ownership of this Eved to the non-Jew. So at what point do we say that he was sold to the non-Jew? So once the non-Jew did the nimus, let's see a minute, but what that procedure is, did the nimus to the Eved, that's considered to be the deal is done. It's as if the Jew sold him already off. And at that point, the Eved is now entitled to receive his freedom. It's a mighty musa. Someone just wants to know what do the words mean exactly? What does that term musa mean? So Amar Rav Huna by Yehuda, nashke. It refers to the term nashke, which says chosem avoda shetolin avoda mitzavreim. It means like a tag. It means like a little necklace that you put on to an eved, which would have the name of the master on it. So once you've transferred that ID to the non-Jew, that's tantamount to having selling him to the non-Jew. And at that point, the Eved wins his freedom. So Masiv of Sheshes. So Sheshes brings a Braisa that also uses the word Nimuso and clearly does not mean that. So clearly our definition of the word that translates the word Nimuso is not correct. What was the context of the Braisa? So Masiv of Sheshes. Harisin v'achakiros v'harisin v'atiyavos v'ovigicham shemishkin sedel v'yisrael. So the context of this has absolutely nothing to do with Avodim. We're simply using this rice to translate what the word Yimusa does or doesn't mean. The context is in a totally different area of halacha. What would the halacha be if you have a non-Jew who owns land in Eretz Yisrael? How does that play out in terms of Trumos and Maisers? Let's say if John owns a field in Eretz Yisrael, and I get some fruit from that field, do I have to subsequently separate Trumos and Maisers? Do I say, once it's belonged to a non-Jew, it loses its kedusha there, just vis-a-vis the agricultural mitzvahs? So that is actually a loaded question that permeates many, many sugyas. Usually when I use the phrase, it's a billion-dollar shaila, that's usually a little bit of exaggeration. This is a billion-dollar shaila, because the entire institution of the Hetta Mechira about selling land to non-Jews and thereby circumventing the din of Shemitah ultimately all hinges upon the shaila as well. So here, this particular b'raisa is assuming that the non-Jew does have the ability to bafkia, yidei kedushas, eretz Yisrael, vis-a-vis Trumos and Maisers, etc. We happen not to really pass like that. Whether we're making like that, there's about a zed, the rabbanon, that's a whole other story. That's the mechira controversy, not for now. But this particular b'raisa is working with the assumption that if the non-Jew owns the land, then there is no obligation of Trumos and Maisers. But here the b'raisa speaks about a little bit of a wrinkle, a little bit of a complication, that the non-Jew owns the land, but the Jew is working on that land. So if the Jew is just simply hired help, he's working for the day to harvest some of the crops, that's not going to change. I'm going to make a break who owns the land. But here it gets a little bit more complicated. If the Jew becomes an oris on that field, an oris means a sharecropper. So a sharecropper was a type of relationship that was very, very common in the days of Chazal. It was actually almost an entire parak of the ninth parak of Metzia that deals with the intricacies of these kinds of relationships. It basically means as follows: I own land, and I'm not particularly interested in farming that land, so I hire somebody to work for me. So it was a little bit more, able-bodied to do some of the hard work of the land. I have to pay him. So how do I pay him? So there are two different kinds of setups of how I can pay him. Either I can pay him as a sharecropper, namely a percentage. So that would probably be a good incentive for him to work a little bit better. So I'll say to him, listen, you work the land, and at the end of the harvest season, I'll give you a third of the crops. That's one kind of stuff. That's called an oris. A kiros, chocher, is a little bit different. A chocher is closer to a rental agreement. A chocher means I'm paying you as an employee. Namely, you work for me for the next 6 months. Whatever the harvest is, whether it's a good harvest or a bad harvest, I'm going to pay you 100 bushels of grain. So we set a specific amount, which may be a better deal, maybe a worse deal, depending on, but at least the guy knows he's for sure going to get 100 bushels. So that's a chocher. A socher is similar to a chocher. It doesn't rhyme, but it's similar to a chocher. That a socher is also a set amount, but he gets paid in cash. So I say, listen, you own my farm, you work for me, and I give you $10,000 at the end of the season. So there are three different kinds of setups, the kinds of arrangements that we have. So here the Braisa speaks about the arisa and the chakiras. So now you have a strange situation. You have a field that's owned by a non-Jew, but the Jew is working, and he's not just working, he's getting a share of the fruit. So maybe one could argue, wait a second, if he's getting a share of the fruit, either as an aris or as a chocher, maybe he's like a partial owner in this fruit. If he's a partial owner of the fruit, maybe the locks of chums and mice are going to kick in. So that's the issue that the Braisa is addressing. So the Braisa speaks about the arise and the chakiros and the arise, but the others. Even if this relationship of sharecropping has been around for generations, this was also a common practice in the days of Chazal, that my father was your sharecropper, my grandfather, your great-grandfather, your grandfather's sharecropper. We're doing this together for years. So even though one could argue that this has been the Sobolovsky sharecropping business for the last 20 generations, so one could argue this is very Jewish-oriented kind of fruit. Kamash Malano, that if the field is owned by Muhammad, whoever owns the field, it's a Goyish field, it's a Goyish field. So according to this opinion, there's no Trumas and Isis. So the Raisa goes on to give you every single case. So it speaks about the Aris and the Chakirus and the Risa about the others. The Avik Yicham Shemishkin Sadeh Yisrael, that what if a Goy owns, an Andrew owns a field, and he borrows money from me, and he puts up his field, his collateral, puts up his field, and there's a mortgage, puts up his collateral for the debt. So I would have thought that all these cases that the Jew really owns to a certain portion, certain degree. So the Braisa says, no. Afa Bisha Aslo Nimusa, even though Nimusa was done, that's what we call the Braisa, because it had that same magic word. Even though the Nimus was done, Petura Min HaMaiser. The Braisa says, unequivocally, it's Muhammad's field, the Gornish, the Jews share, or sharecroppers, or rolls, or none of that is relevant. But now the Gemara wants to know, so what does Nimusa mean? The Isaac HaDayit HaKhanashke, if you tell me that the word Nimusa was a term that was used specifically for a tag on Evan, Sodabas Nashki, you don't put tags on fields to say the field belongs to the whole pictorial imagery is obviously wrong. It must be that we mistranslated the phrase Nimusa. Elam Rav Sheshes Zman. What it means is as follows, that we set up an arrangement, we set up a time and said, if I don't pay you back by such and such a time, you can keep that field. So now the Braisa makes a lot of sense. The Braisa says that even though such an arrangement was already made, it doesn't matter. It's still, the field hasn't transferred ownership yet from the non-Jew to the Jew. And the other Jew was a Maisa having kicked in. So the word Nimuso means time. So now we can understand what it meant in the context of the Eved as well. When a Jew borrows money from a non-Jew and he makes his Eved as an effective payment, and he set up an arrangement and said, if I don't pay back by January 1st, you're going to take my Eved, you're going to own the Eved. So he basically transferred ownership of the Eved. Bottom line is he basically gave the Eved over to the non-Jew. And now the Din Mishnah kicks in. If you give an Eved to a non-Jew, the Eved goes free. So it took us a little bit of... Oh, we have not yet determined has the time arrived yet. So far, all that's happened is that the deal was made. At this point, we're going to change that or elaborate upon that in a moment. So bottom line is, it took us 20 minutes just to translate one word. The word was Nimusa. So Nimusa means a time-bound condition. So in Hilchos Avodim, we understand why the making of such a condition will now be equivalent to transferring over the Eved to the non-Jew, and now the Eved goes free. In the context of the Chumash and Ma'aseh, even though that time condition was made, it doesn't affect anything. So it's great that we've translated the word Yemuso, but now the Gemara says we have a big problem. So Kashya Zman Hazman, but now we have a lumbus question. I'd count the dictionary. Now the lumbus begins. So does making this condition transfer ownership or not? Is this the halakha equivalent of giving it over to somebody else? So the item is mine. I didn't formally sell it to you yet. I didn't formally give it to you yet. But we wrote up a document saying that if I don't pay back, by January 1st, it becomes yours. So is that tantamount to having transferred or not? So in Hilchos Avodim, we said yes. And therefore, once the time condition was signed off on, so now the Eved goes free. So that's the halakha equivalent of selling it to the non-Jew. In the case of Ma'aseh, we said the opposite. Because in the case of Ma'aseh, we said that even though the non-Jew has already signed off on this condition to give the money over to the Jew if and when he doesn't pay back his loan, we said it doesn't matter. Terubin Ma'aseh holds bond that it hasn't physically transferred over to the Jew. It still belongs to the original person. So it's very nice that we translated the word in the Muso properly, but we don't understand conceptually. Is this legality called Nibuso? Setting up a condition, writing up in a document that if and when I don't pay back, you're going to get it. Is that called giving it over or not? So it comes to where it says, Lokasha, it's not a question. Had the Mata Zimne, had lo Mata Zimne? Umar says, it depends. Has the time arrived or not? They're two different cases. So if the time has not yet arrived, so I'm the original owner, I maintain my ownership. If the time has already arrived, then the game's over. I haven't paid back my loan, so you're going to walk away from the field. So you own the field already. The Gemara says, wait a second, that's true. Like the Eved, the Mata Zimne, if you're talking about, in the case of the Eved, what made the Eved belong to the non-Jew, and thereby in effect, merit his freedom, if you're going to tell me the time already came, I need a price to tell me that. I mortgage my Eved for this loan, and the time has already arrived, and the guy is coming in to pick up my Eved. So I need a brisa to tell me that that's called selling the Eved to the guy. Of course, it's called selling the Eved. I give the Eved over to the non-Jew. But once it's Mata Zimne, it's all. Once it's out, it means he owns it. The Mice, he owns it already at that point. Once I have defaulted. You're a nice guy. This is the non-Jews come to pick up his Eved. So once it's all finished, it's in foreclosure, whatever modern day equivalent you want to call it. This non-Jew has got his hands on his Eved already, either literally or figuratively. The Gemara says no. Ella idi v'idi d'lo mata zibni. Liolam, in neither case has the time arrived. So what's the difference? When do we say that simply setting up such a condition is considered to be transferring ownership? It depends what the setup was exactly. That in the case of the Eved, so the condition was that if I don't pay back, the kavalos man the gufo, you're going to get the guf of the Eved proper. But in the case of the field, you're not going to get the field. I'm not transferring you the field. I'm going to give you all the rights to the fruit. You'll be able to eat the fruit and run to pay back the loan that I owe you, but no one's giving you over the field proper. So that's what the Brisa said, that even though now the Jew is going to be walking around eating all the fruit for the next 100 years, it doesn't matter. So the land is ultimately still going to belong to the non-Jew, so then it's still considered to be a goyish field, and there's no chiyuv of Jews and Mises. The Gemara gives another answer. The top of Mamdalev and Aleph. Rishalava amanas the mashkino v'lo mashkino. So this gets very a little complicated. But like we showed him just technically what the case is. So
the case of the Eved was not that you're going to take the Eved.
You're like, just going to use the Eved, right? That's right, right. So that would be like the field, right, right. So wouldn't be considered to be literally selling it. So Rashi explains the case. Look at the top of Mamdalev and Aleph. Had the Sada, the case of the field. When Shalom of the Gechavim of Israel, that the non-Jew buys money from the Jew, Amanashe Imlo Ephraim is Ban Ploni, Bo Mashkinei Mikakazu, Udei Shalcha. So I set up this kind of a deal of a Mashkon, Ahadik Tani Peturu Namaisa, Kol Zman Shalom of Israel. So Rashi explains that even though the time has come, but as Steve said, the Jew, he didn't come yet. So in theory, the Jew's got this document in his hand that says, January 1st, come and get it. But the Jew's in he's in Florida now. He's not coming back yet. So Kol Zman that the Jew hasn't come back yet. So even though the Torah, I forgot the Mata Zimnei, have a Cheska v'kichavim. So then he's going to be Potter from Isis. It still belongs to the non-Jew. But by the Eved, even though the non-Jew hasn't literally taken the Eved yet, since he can take it at a moment's notice, that's considered to be enough of a selling to the non-Jew, and the game is over. The Eved is going to win his freedom. So now the Gemara continues on the top of Amdalah and Aleph, other intricate examples of what's considered to be selling to the non-Jew, or what's not necessarily considered to be selling to the non-Jew. So Tana Rabbanan, we're going to the price of Gova B'chovo. What if a Jew borrows money from a non-Jew, owes him $10,000? He didn't designate his Eved to be the mortgage. He owes the non-Jew $10,000. And the non-Jew on his own comes one day and says, listen, I'm coming to collect my debt. Comes with the sheriff and he says, ooh, I'm going to take that Eved in lieu of my debt. So I didn't give the Eved of, I didn't sell the Eved to the non-Jew. Or Oshalocho Sikriko. Or what if it's not as civil as that? It's not that that I owe the money to the non-Jew, but it's a situation of a sikriko. Sikriko is a sugya a little bit later on in Kitten. It was a Greek word. It referred to a practice that took place towards the end of Bayesheni, when the Romans had conquered already Eretz Yisrael. So very often you'd have a Roman would come and he'd snoop around and he would want somebody's field. So we had a small arrangement. He would basically, the mafia, he'd basically tell the Jew, you know, not, if you want to keep your field, that's wonderful, but it's your life or your field. So the Jew would end up in effect, but, you know, everything was done, you know, by the books, everything was honest. I'll pay you. I'm going to pay you for the field. I'm going to pay you for $1 million field. I'll give you $100. You know, just to make it look a little bit clean. So there was a whole system that was floating around in the days of the right before the Churban, where the Romans were coming and taking land right and left for the Jews and basically threatening them with their lives. So if, let's say, the non-Jew comes and he takes as a secret, goes and he takes the Eved from the Jew. The Jew didn't give it to him willingly. Well, Yotzei L'Chairus. So then he doesn't necessarily go free. And if for some chance this Eved looks out, he runs away from the Roman, runs away from the guy, so then he's going to go back to his original owner. The bottom line is that it's only the only time this takana works of Yatsa Lecheiros is only if the Jew does it willingly. So yes, is that really true that if the non-Jew takes it as a chov, is the Jew owes the non-Jew $1 million? Not a bad case. The non-Jew's honest. The Jew took out a big loan and he didn't pay, he reneged on the loan. The non-Jew comes, rightfully so, and he collects whatever is coming to him. So you're going to tell me that that's not the equivalent of selling, quote unquote, your Eved to the non-Jew. Well, minu, we have the following b'raisa. Risha also beis melech gorno. Let's say a person has a whole threshing floor, has a whole pile of grain, and now the king comes in, king's servants come in, and they inform him that we're taking a lot of that grain away from you. Now the question becomes, does he have to take off maisrus off of that grain? Because in effect, it was his at some point, and now he's not going to have it anymore. So is he obligated to be concerned that the lady shouldn't be cheated from his share? So should we say that here I had 100 bushels of grain, king took 20 bushels away from me? So when I separate, it's not taken away from me. When I separate my maestros, so do I have to in effect reimburse the lady for his loss? But do I say no? Same I lost my chelan, so the lady lost his chelan. So comes the price, says depends. If I owed my taxes, I owed the money legitimately to the king, so then why should the lady suffer? So I should give more maestros to the lady. In the amparos, possibly asked there, if the non-Jew is taking it, the first refers to Shaloi Kedid. The non-Jew is coming, the king's coming to decide one fine day that he wants to take away all my crops. It's not coming to him in the taxes. It's not the IRS. This is the style of the sugar the king. It's coming to take it away stuff. It's not really coming to him. So then, what am I going to do? I have to give it to him. He's going to kill me otherwise, throw me into jail. But I don't have to reimburse the lady for his loss. So possibly ask him. So in the first case where I literally owed the money, I didn't pay my taxes, so the king's coming to collect my fruit. So here we view this as if I'm giving it to the king willingly because this is my way of paying back what I'm supposed to be paying. So that's the case that I'm giving it willingly, so to speak, to the king. So why the case of the Eved when the I owed money to somebody and the non-Jew comes and takes my my evidence reimbursement, why don't we view that as me giving it to the non-Jew willingly? Why does the Bryce say, lo yotze lecheiros? He says, no, that's different. Shining hasam to come shtar shilei. There, I'm nene from the fact I'm paying off my chov. I'm paying off my chov with the levies. With the levies, what's coming due to the levy, that's not right. Whereas over here, when it comes to the kenas, at the end of the day, I didn't really want to give this to the non-Jew. I would have been more than happy if the non-Jew would have taken something else. He could have taken my animal. He went ahead on his own and took the Eved. That wasn't my problem. The Gemara is still continuing to question this aloha. So Toshva and Yamarav, Amocha Avdo, the Parhang of Gilchavim, Yotze Lecheiros. If a person sells their Eved to a Parhang of Gilchavim, what the world's part? Clearly not a Hebrew source of a word. And Rashi explains, Meitzik v'sam alilus v'mochel v'dayam parta shel alav. But basically, the Danju is trying to extract money from me. So he's starting to spread rumors about me and starting to get me into trouble. So he basically comes to me and he says, a little gangster type of mentality. He says, listen, if you want, as we call it, like protection money, so, listen, if you know it's good for you, so you'll give us X amount of money. So if you know it's good for you, so give me give me X, and I go ahead and I give him my Eved. So the non-Jew comes and says, you give me $100,000, and I'll make sure nothing bad happened to you. So I give him my Eved worth $100,000. So the Braisa says, Rav said I wasn't supposed to do that. So I sold my Eved off to the non-Jew. So you have to look chayrus. The Gemara says the husband of the five for PhD. The reason is because I should have given him something else. But why did I volunteer to give the Eved? He didn't take the Eved. He came and said, listen, you got till tomorrow morning to hand me over $100,000. You want to give me an Eved, you want to give me a Bahamian, you want to give me a field, you want to give me I couldn't care less. The non-Jew is not particular, he's not particular, he just wants to make sure he gets something. I choose in my own volition to give him an Eved. That's not right. So I violated the din of selling my Eved to a non-Jew. So Gufa, the Gemara continues to explain that. Amar Rav Mecha Av the Parang of Kham Yetz Lecheres, Mahavla Maven. Says, what do you want from this poor Jew? The Jew's being intimidated, being harassed. What do you want from him? What did he do wrong? He must tell you what he did wrong. Have the advice for PAs. He should have finagled with the parhang. He should have asked the gangster that take something else, take my animals, take my shield, take something else. But stop the handover in Eved. Let's not forget the Eved is a human being and he's basically Jewish. He has to keep Shabbos and Kashrus, and now you're handing him over to these guys. I imagine that the degree of Shmir Shabbos and Kashrus at the Parhang's house is not exactly up to par. So now the Gemara goes through a lot of just very, very intricate details about this halacha of selling an Eved to a non-Jew. At what point is it considered to be a sale that you lost the right to that Eved? So boy, Rabbi Yirmiyah. What if a person sells their Eved to a non-Jew for 30 days? Maybe one could argue, if I sell him permanently, he's never going to keep Shabbos and Kashrus again. That was a terrible Aveira. So then I lose my rights to the Eved. But over here, I sold for 30 days. Who's up for 30 days? Who suffered 30 days? He's going to come back after 30 days. So maybe the takana that the Eved goes free doesn't kick in. So Toshma, the Gemara tries to bring approved. The Amarav, the Gemara thought that these Parhan guys were only temporary. These are not real gangsters. They're not mamash going to take your Eved forever. They need some about them right now. So they're walking around intimidating people and saying, listen, either we're going to go to the bottom of the river or we're going to take your Eved for a couple of weeks. So the Gemara thought that these were only a temporary, quote-unquote, sale, temporary stealing of my Eved. So, and still the halacha is that the Eved goes free. So the Gemara says, no. Hasam b'parag b'chomshi enoch hazeres. These are real gangsters. These are not the nice guys. These are the tough guys. These are the guys who take him and never give him back again. So it's not clear what the halacha would be if I actually sell my Eved in a way that the Eved is going to go free he's going to come back within 30 days. Is that called a mechira now? And the Braisa continues, machor chutz b'malachto. What if I sell my Eved to a non-Jew, but I make a condition that he's not going to have to work? I'm not sure what he's going to do with him, but he's not going to have to work. So why is that important? Because if the Eved's not going to have to work, so then he won't have to work on Shabbos. The whole fear is, the whole reason why we're so machmir, the guy who sells the Eved off to the non-Jew, is because the Eved's going to have to work on Shabbos. But if I stipulated the contract before and he's not going to work on Shabbos, so then there's nothing to be concerned with. So we're not sure. Maybe that would be an exception to this rule. or chutz min mitzvah smahu, or what if I make a condition that he should be your eved to the non-Jew, but he'll have his full religious rights. So we're going to make a whole list of things. He's going to be entitled to kosher food. He's not going to work on Shabbos. He'll have time to whatever the eved wants to be able to do. He'll be fully protected. So Ma, what's the deal? So one could argue that there's nothing wrong. So I gave him. So now John's his master instead of Yankton. What's the difference? Or maybe you could say, no, I'm selling to a non-Jew. Who knows? Maybe the non-Jew won't keep the deal. Anything could go wrong. So is that included or not? What if I mamish stipulated and said, he's not your Rebbe for Shabbos and Yom Tov. These are his days off, and he's going to come back to me. He's going to come. He'll chill it with me every Shabbos. He'll sit at my sukkah with a Kanani Rebbe. He'll sit by my Pesach Seder every year. He's not going to be in your house on Shabbos and Yom Tov. So what's the din? Well, the getosha. What's the din if I sell him to a getosha? A getosha is a non-Jew. He's not keeping Shabbos. He's not keeping kosher. The other year, he's not an Ovid of a Zara. So maybe one can argue that he can be trusted not to take advantage and make him. He's not going to make the Ebed work on Shabbos. The Yisrael Mumamal. What if I sell my Ebed to a non-from Jew? Yisrael Mumar. So on the one hand, I didn't sell him to a non-Jew. On the other hand, he's giving the same problem. The Jewish guy has a store on Shabbos. He wants the Ebed to be there. Lekusimau. What if I sell him to a Kusi? Kusi with those Chevra, you know, in the end of Ice Rishon, who the Shomronim, they were Nishtahair. We're not even sure what they're Jewish, not Jewish. Were they keeping mitzvah? Some mitzvahs? Yeah, no. So what would the din be? Hoshin b'yachadis. The Gemara says that we could at least conclude the halach in some of these cases. Gertoshe b'reo kuhu k'ayvi kichavim. That if I sell to a Gertoshe, even though he's a frum guy, he's observing the Shabbos enough, not worshiping idols, he's not keeping Shabbos and Kashrus, and therefore, when I sold my Eved to him, that was a big problem. Kusi b'Yisrael Mumar. What about a case of either a Kusi or Yisrael Mumar? Amri like Eved Kicham. There are some who argued that he's like a Goy, but Amri like Yisrael, and some said that he's like a Jew. So the bottom line is that we have a lot of fakers in these halachas. Basically, today we realize that even the definition of a sale is not all simple what that means, and who the recipient of the sale is, who is the purchaser, is also not even 100% clear, and what stipulations you can make to perhaps circumvent this law also not clear. Otherwise, we have perfect clarity. Otherwise, we have a sugya down pat. A lot of different pieces of the sugya that are flying around. Hopefully, next year, so we'll try to finish up a little bit more about this din of this knas of selling an eved to a non-Jew.